This is a really wonderful podcast episode. Everyone listening to it right now, just know you're doing yourself a big favor by tuning in. I have Beth Barkus joining me. She is, I don't know if like therapist the right word? Because you're so much more than a therapist. You're like a life guru. You are an example. You are just a friend walking side by side with so many of us in this music business and music industry, and helping guide us to mental health, especially in the country music industry. I personally have gained so many tools from being in your presence, hearing what you have to say, the groups that you have put together to get us all working together, to lean on each other. You are truly an angel to this earth, and Beth is one of the therapist at Porter's Call. So explain to everyone the magical person that you are and how to bless us all. Because it's truly, it is a gift what you and Porter's Call does for the music industry. And I can't wait for you to explain it.
Thank you, Caroline. That is a introduction that's hard to follow. So I will probably bring it back down to earth so it's not so people don't view me as some grandiose person. Essentially, I've been working at Porter's Call for over a decade, but it has been a presence in the Nashville community, specifically serving the music industry. And when I say music industry, I mean more specifically artists and their families. So if someone's a touring and recording music artist, which we have a lot of those here in Nashville, they can come to Porter's Call and actually receive free care.
Free counsel.
F-R-E-E, like $0.
Unreal, because once you get into the therapy journey, you really need to go consistently. And usually it's like at least $150 a session. Then you go all the time, it adds up. And a lot of artists cannot afford this.
Right, 100%. And that's really why our founder, Al Andrews, started Porter's Call, is because he was struggling because he was cutting his rates all the time because a lot of the people he was seeing were in music. And the other piece about counseling in general is that a lot of times you go once a week, same time every week, you know, and see your therapist. And that is not the artist lifestyle. You know, you've got an artist, they're out on the road, and then when they're home, they're in the recording studio, and then they have a write session, and then they have these meetings, and it's just hard to provide that kind of consistency. So we have to change the paradigm a little bit, and we just provide a level of care and the specialized, like more specific tailored care for the creative and their family. And so we are called Porter's Call. And yeah, even though those of us here have our masters and we've been trained in counseling, we usually just call ourselves porters. And it doesn't mean it's the person that takes your bags, you know, when you're on a cruise. It's not that kind of porter.
You're taking our emotional baggage.
Exactly. So I guess technically the analogy holds. So it's a good metaphor. But essentially the name came from, and we're not even, you know, Al who started, it's not Catholic, but it comes from the back in the Benedictine monasteries, they had a porter who stood outside the gates or inside the gates of a monastery. And when a sojourner that was just journeying through was weary, that traveler would pop into the gates, and the porter would open the door, which is why we have an open door logo. And the porter would call out a blessing, and he would invite that traveler in. And so when that traveler would come in, if the traveler was, you know, sick, he would help him, you know, get care. If he was hungry, he would feed him. If he was needed rest and a place to stay, he could stay there. There's a very specific, like, whatever this person need, we wanted to help them. We want to help them get to that need. And that's what the porter did. So we call ourselves porters, even though we're trained in the therapeutic process and want people to receive healing, heart, soul, mind, and body. We also partner with other places and people in town that also provide care for musicians and artists. So essentially what we do is we see people in here kind of day in, day out on the hour, and visit with individuals, couples. We work with bands.
Which a lot of people don't know this, and I want you to finish this. Yeah. Like, bands need therapy because
100%.
Being in a band, and like, just like Michael, my husband's in a band with four guys, and they do really well together. But it's like, that is a marriage in of itself. You have all these egos, all these different ideas, and like, You need an outside opinion, and that's huge. It's huge that you offer that for bands.
100%. 100%. It is forced family, and it's like a forced marriage, and it's actually even harder. It's like, take a family that they do love each other, but they haven't really stepped into this kind of marriage commitment. You put them on wheels and you just add as much stress as possible and ask them to get along and be happy. And so it really is necessary to have a third party that's in the mix that helps them have healthy conflict and conversation. And so, and the thing that I love about us being free is that if you're in the music industry, you have a team of people that are helping you in your career, and that's important. And each person gets a cut, and that's important. They need that for their livelihood as well, and they're working hard on your behalf. But we wanted to be someone who's in this industry, that's on your team, that is championing you, cheerleading you, supporting you as your friend to come alongside, but we don't get a cut. And we really love that, not only for those that don't have a penny to cut, you know, that even 10% would be pennies, for those that don't have two dimes to scratch together, to those that are doing really well and filling out arenas.
You have artists across the spectrum.
100%.
It's incredible. Right.
Yeah. And all different genres. Cause as you know, in Nashville, it's country, it's gospel, it's CCM, it's pop, it's rock, it's indie, Americana, bluegrass. Like, we have such a beautiful array of genres and people. And so everybody's experiences are a little different, but ultimately we're all the same. Like, we all struggle with anxiety. We all struggle with depression at some season and some circumstances. We all have conflicts and relationships and struggles and insecurities and identity and family backstories that are really hard that need healing. And so we all need it, but you know, people like you, Caroline, and your husband and other artists that you're friends with, and you know, you guys have all of the same struggles that every human does. And then you're living in a glass bowl and for the whole world to see, and then you're placed not only in that glass bowl, but you're now elevated on a platform that that even creates a lot more attention, a lot more pressure, and it makes it really hard to know, who do I go to trust? Who can I trust? Who do I go to? And who's going to understand this life? And everybody thinks this is glamorous, and this is really hard. There's hard parts of this life.
It's very mentally taxing. Like, as wonderful as like the high moments are, even those like high moments, that's not real life. That is like a part of your career accolade success. That's incredible, but you don't stay there. Then you come back and you get back into the mix of your life and like readjusting after you've been on the road and say you have some epic experience. Then you come back and you adjust back into real life, adjust back into like another routine, or say like you have a big low that hits you, because with being an artist, you have the highest highs to the lowest lows. And when you're on that high, it's great, but then the low comes, and then sometimes your teams fall apart, and then you have to rebuild, and then a pandemic hits, and then you have babies and all this stuff. And it's just like, it is so much navigating. And then on top of it, like you said, you are in the public eye, and it's just a lot of pressure. And sometimes you don't know who to talk to, because you don't really want to like share all this dirty laundry with everyone, but you need to talk it out. And it's not like, it's so to know that you guys are there and it's like confidential, you guys truly just want the best for everyone mentally to thrive. It's like, it's such a relief and a place to like let your like sigh of relief to be like, okay. And then you provide tools, which is great. So it's like, okay, yes, you're going, this is what's happening right now. So I'm completely overwhelmed and lost and depressed, and you can kind of like share it with you. And then you create a way, like y'all give us tools to navigate, which is huge. Cause like otherwise artists just stay lost in their brains, and that can spiral and really lead to a dark place.
Right. That's exactly right. And I hope that that's what we're doing. And I do think that at least the feedback we keep getting is that, oh, this is a lifeline. Oh, I feel like I can breathe. Oh, I'm so glad that I don't have to explain all of these details of the music industry that you just get it. You know how it works. We're able to almost finish their sentences when they don't have words. And we want to really validate their experience that, hey, this is a gift that you get to do music and that you get to, you know, build your family and, you know, support one another and all of those things. And yet at the same time, you are a human. You're not just a product. And I feel like even in music or any kind of influencing platform, there's a level of vulnerability that you bring. So you doing podcasts, you bring your own story in, you know, Michael writing music that's personal, you know, all of those are as creatives and as influencers with a platform, you guys are putting yourself out there. And so you really need a safe place to be off stage and to just say, oh, can I just breathe for a second and exhale all this stuff that's hard? And then to be validated in that space and to be around others. And that's where I feel like groups are really important. Community is a real key to people being more whole with their heart, their soul, their mind, and their body. And so I really am grateful that you're also part of those different spaces.
Well, the group thing has changed my life. And the thing I also really love about Porter's Call is isn't it kind of all word of mouth in a way?
We do not advertise. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I started hearing buzzes about it. I've been in Nashville now for almost 20 years and Porter's Call has been around for 20 years, right?
Yes, 20.
Mm-hmm. So I've been hearing, I started hearing buzz about Porter's Call because I've always been interested in therapy. I'm a number 4 on the Enneagram, so I'm super emotional. And if I'm not healthy, I get completely consumed by my feelings. And back in my early 20s, when I actually was an artist myself and pursuing the music business and had so many jobs in the music industry, but I would get lost in the process of it all because I took it all so personal and I thought oh my gosh, someone is going to think I'm worthless, or if they actually see that everything's unraveling, or I actually look like I have it together but I have no idea what I'm doing, and or I don't feel qualified, I feel like an imposter, the self-doubt just creeps in so much, and then you just don't feel you it's just so easy to go through all those things, and then when things fall apart you're like, oh look, it's confirmed, I'm actually terrible at this, why am I doing this? And I would spiral constantly. So I was always hearing about Porter's Call. And I didn't dive into therapy until my late 20s. So I was into self-help books and stuff, but I was a little too scared to go into therapy because I didn't even want to tell a therapist my deepest, darkest secrets. Because I was once they hear this, they're going to just know I'm just a worthless human. I can't even tell a therapist this. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way. That in the beginning, before you go to therapy, you're I can't share this with anyone because then I'm going to expose myself. Someone's going to know and I'll just probably explode into thin air because it's out there, you know?
Yeah.
People feel that way? But then once I started going to therapy, and then the groups that you have assembled, the women's group, and then you've done smaller groups with women. And I don't know what the man situation is, but that has been incredible to lean on other women who I admire and look up to, and even women I didn't know yet, but I have met through Porter's Call. And it's all confidential. It's all safe. You, in the beginning of every meeting, everyone, says, we all agree that this is a safe place and no one's going to share any of this. And it's just so incredible to know that you can go and say what's on your mind, what's weighing on you, from, infertility stuff to, marriage things to trying to figure out a balance to just communication, all sorts of stuff we talk about in that group. And then you leave there and you're like, oh my God, I feel so much better because I'm not alone. And I got tools and I got tips and we all are working to help each other. It's just, it's a life changer. Okay, so you gather all these women together. We've had a little internet spotty connection situation here, but we're gonna be great, you know? If you can't work through some issues with your therapist, then who can you, right?
That's right. Flexibility and positivity.
Yes.
Yes. So essentially you're asking, what was, my thought behind getting these groups together. And as much as I love doing individual work and couples work and band work, my deepest passion is to see ladies connect with one another. I really believe that all I'm doing is kind of laying down some dirt, and you guys are bringing in the seed, and we're just trying to cultivate a garden for you guys to dig roots together. And so I really believe that belonging and community and connection with others on a similar journey is one of the best healing environments for you to feel like, okay, I'm not alone. I'm not crazy. I feel validated. And as much as I feel like I can bring some things to the table, I feel like what you all bring to each other is probably even more valuable than what trained therapists can bring. And so I really have had a passion to gather women that are married to male artists, that maybe these women have had no experience in the music industry and they just kind of fell into it because of who they're in relationship with. I have a group for that. Then there's another group of women that are artists themselves, and some are dating, some are single, some are married, but they are walking that journey out, and it's just really good for them to be around other female artists that are out there just trying to do it. Different genres, I think, is also helpful. Then I have another group of women that you get to be a part of that I'm so grateful. And those are ladies that have been in the industry either as an artist or on the business professional side, and are used to do it in the past or are doing it currently. And so, Caroline, I feel like you hit both of those boxes because you were an artist, so you really get that life, and you're also really in the industry now as well, and you're married to a male artist. So there's just an interesting dynamic there of just figuring out which lane am I supposed to be in? Does my husband want me to offer some feedback as based off my personal experience professionally and personally? Or is he just wanting me to be a listening ear?
You told us that to our group. You're like, which hat do you want me to wear? Do you want me to wear your wife hat where I'm just like listening and like being a support for you? Or do you want me to wear the hat where I like give you some honest feedback based on what I think? And I feel like that was like a breakthrough for so many of us. We're like, oh, that's really great.
Right. And for you to hear from each other to go, oh, you too. You guys have that issue, or you have that dynamic. And so I think what I also discovered is that as I'm in these sessions, like 1 hour after another hour, oftentimes in one day, I would meet with three different people and I felt like I was hearing and saying the same thing. And I was like hearing what they were saying. And then I felt like I was providing feedback and tools and those types of things. And I said, almost like on repeat, the same thing three times in one day. And I thought, all these girls would really like each other. So why don't I just get them, introduce them to each other? And they already have all that they need to really dig deep. And I just need to get them in a room together and cultivate an environment that they can grow together. So that's really the heart behind these groups. Because I feel like it not only helps their own individual journey, but it really, it pours into their relationships and their family. And it really also just helps them to be a better friend, to learn how to be a better friend and receive that kind of friendship.
So. Well, and something that I really didn't know I was going to appreciate so much, but now that I have been a part of this, I really appreciate knowing that I'm walking into a safe place. Like you said, with women who are walking the same walk. Obviously everyone's life is different, but we're in the same general walk. We understand the struggles, and knowing that you have positive women to lean on who want you to thrive in your marriage, who want you to thrive in your career, who are going to offer any tip they can that's worked for them, that's helpful, going to share. It's like, instead of like, sometimes people get together and it's like toxic, you know, and it's like,
yes,
all that right. Comparing, and it's just like tearing each other down. And like, I know, walking into any group that I'm a part of or any session at Porter's Call, I'm going to be refueled and given energy and tools that will serve me so positively. And that is just so wonderful to have that outlet in life, especially the older you get and the more that gets piled on your plate and the heavier the world seems to feel. You have to have outlets that fill you up and that you leave going, feeling like a better person with tools to like navigate the world instead of just having the old tools that we sometimes all lean on, like, you know, bad habits, like that, just to like numb out or to ignore or to push down. And, but this is actually all these people getting together, wanting to get better. That's okay. What's really cool. And I feel like it, like you said, it is positive peer pressure or trickle effect, because now it's like Michael wants to go. A lot of our friends go, and it's becoming not like scary for guys to go to therapy, because I feel like women are better at opening up generally. I mean, that's a blanket statement, but I feel like it's a little harder for men sometimes to want to open up. But like, because of Porter's Call and because of like the camaraderie with it and everyone going, it's just like, it's almost like a thing to talk about this positive, and everyone kind of wants to be a part of it. And like you said, it's like, oh my gosh, like they're like making strides in their mental health by going here. Like I need that, you know? And it's cool to see people that you look up to doing the work, because it inspires mm-hmm. you to do the work, you know?
Right.
It's a positive and peer pressure effect.
Exactly. It's it's definitely a healthy, contagious, you know, thing to spread. It's a good, healthy thing to feel almost jealous, like a healthy yes. jealousy.
Like, man, they really got their head screwed on right. Their marriage is on point.
Right. But what's interesting about that is the reason why you see that is because that authenticity and that health came through the work. It wasn't like typically if you see something that looks almost too perfect, it's because it's not. And if you see something that represents an authentic like health, then you want to ask the question, how did I suspect it hasn't always been this way. Can you tell me about your marriage journey that helped you get to where you are now and in this authentic, healthy place? And I guarantee they will tell you they've been through the fire. They have been through the fire, and it's refining. And really the people that are most compelling and safe are the people that are pretty vulnerable. And that's just one thing I will say about you, Caroline, is every time you've been a part of a group, it is like, there's so many people that have come up after me. It's like, oh, I just love it when this girl said this. And then the next group, and they're like, I love it when the girl said this. And each time you've been the girl. and it's because you're so like, there's no pretense. You're just like, ah, it's really hard. Like I'm, you know, this or that, whether it's like first time momhood or, you know, whatever it is that you're navigating. When we're vulnerable about how things are, the reality of how it is hard or scary, it's an invitation to others to be vulnerable like that. And so that is, again, it's that garden of cultivating that kind of atmosphere for the roots to feel like they're safe to go deeper. So belonging and community is everything, but it comes with a lot of work and showing up.
Okay. So you're talking about the work, and every time anyone talks about therapy and getting through mental health, it's always the work, doing the work. So we're talking, say a lot of people listening right now have not been to therapy or not in the music industry and couldn't go to Porter's Call, for instance, but say that they know they need to start working on their mental health, or maybe they live in Nashville and they want to go to Porter's Call and they're in the art music industry, whatever. But like, say that whoever's listening just knows that they need therapy, but they're like, what on earth is the work going to be? Like, what is this, the work that everyone talks about? Like, what do you have to do? If say you have childhood trauma, maybe even abuse, you've got situations with your partner or whatever. It's like, say you have a lot going on that you have not emotionally dealt with that is really plaguing your life and your mind. What is the work for us who haven't started this therapy journey? What do you suggest? Like, how do you start with someone who walks in and is like, I am such a train wreck. I'm hopeless. There's no help for me. I'm drowning. Like, what do you even do?
That's a great question. And I appreciate you bringing it back to, hey, everybody listening is not necessarily people that have been to Porter's Call or are part of the music industry as an artist that can take advantage of this free service. That's a very, very, I mean, we're the only place in the country we've ever heard that provides completely free, not sliding scale, but completely free. And partly is because we work specifically with artists, we do have a beautiful industry here in Nashville where labels and managers and places like that believe in the whole care and health of the artists and their families that they're willing to donate to our nonprofit. So I do recognize this is a very unique situation. But I will say there are lots of places out there that at least provide sliding scale counseling. So so my recommendation is, I feel like everybody, if you want to be the healthiest version of yourself, everybody should find a therapist, a counselor of some sort, or some sort of group therapy. And so what it could look like is, if you're part of a church, a lot of times they have these things called Celebrate Recovery, and they're free, and they have grief groups, and they have addiction groups, and they have divorce care groups, and they have various groups that kind of help tackle various subjects. If you if you've had a struggle or a story that has to do with any kind of substance, there AA, there's too many stigmas connected to that and too many misunderstandings. It is a beautiful group of walking through the steps. It's free. You get, you know, you get others around you that really understand the curriculum and that support one another and sponsors. So another type of, and that's free. Another group is a group called ACA, and they call it ACA and which stands for Adult Children of Alcoholics, and then they've also added Dysfunctional Families. And so raise your hand if you come from a dysfunctional family. Like, everyone should raise their hands.
Because we're humans.
Exactly. There is no such thing as a perfect functional family. I don't care if both parents are therapists and they're so healthy and all their children, it's like we all mess up. And so, so all of us could benefit from that curriculum. So, and you can find ACA, Adult Children of Alcoholics and Dysfunctional Families, pretty much in any city or town.
What does a session look like? So like a first session, like what do you do when you have a first person who's really drowning?
Okay. So if you're talking about a group work like Celebrate Recovery or ACA or AA or Al-Anon, those are all going to be group meetings, and you show up and you're going to be in a group and it's super awkward. Just prepare. It's not something that's fun and like a party that's easy. It's like, it's awkward. And so I always tell people, give it three tries and be open-minded. So go in, give it three tries, be open-minded. If it's not a fit, there's probably another group down the street that's a better fit. Give it three tries. So that is my first recommendation. Be super open and give it three tries. When it comes to therapy, I would say if you have insurance, you can look up behavioral health. It's usually listed under behavioral health or mental health services. And most insurances at least cover co-pays or partial pay. And you can look that up and maybe can get partial pay. Then there's a lot of organizations, like in our town, there's a place called the Refuge Counseling Center, and it's in Franklin, Tennessee, just south of Nashville. And they see anybody and everybody, and it's sliding scale. So if you can pay the full going rate, you pay $150. If you need a sliding scale, you may pay $50 based off your income. And let's just be honest, we all spend that $50 every once in a while when we go out to a nice dinner. And so treat yourself. Instead of going out for a nice dinner one week, maybe you go to therapy. And I would say, again, give it three tries. Go in open-minded, give it three tries. So
you specifically, so there's various ways. Tell me about you specifically, like with your session, when someone walks in and they're dumping their life out. What do you do? How do you assess how you navigate that meeting?
That's great. That's a great question. So typically what I would do is we do initial intake, and that's just something, a little questionnaire that people fill out online before they come in. Most places do that. Most places are way more extensive than ours. We're very, very simple. We have a one page that asks maybe eight questions. Like, what do you want to get out of therapy? What brought you in? What are some issues you want to address? Have you done counseling before? You know, so, but a lot of times most therapists will have maybe a few pages to fill out. Well, that gives them a little backstory that brings them up to speed, so that whenever you come for your first visit, you don't have to do a ton of backstory. So on my first visit, after somebody's filled out that intake, I have some ideas to what brought them in. They wanted to do couples work, or they wanted to work through a tragedy that just happened, or a loss they just experienced, or addiction, or whatever, past childhood trauma. Sometimes they come in knowing that. If they don't, I just am like, tell me a little bit about yourself. What brought you in today? Or have you done counseling before? I'll ask some questions to get that conversation going. And I would say inevitably, no matter whether you come in for whatever you come in for, we almost will always go back to some childhood. Because
childhood, isn't it?
It is. It always goes back to your family of origin in some way, shape, or form. We may only dip our toe in the water and may not have to camp there, but most of the time we have to revisit our story.
And what is that? Are we programmed? That's our wiring. And then all of a sudden these like giant moments are just like ingrained into your life and it shapes the rest of your existence. Like, why is that so powerful? Because we all try to act like, oh, it's our childhood. It doesn't matter. I'm fine. But we're not fine.
Right. Well, I would say, you know, the good news is we all have dysfunctional family stories, some a little bit more, some on one end of the spectrum, some on the other end of the spectrum, but we're all on that spectrum. So we all can come in admitting there's parts of my story that even though I may not have had a ton of trauma, I'm only one generation away. So if I haven't had a ton of big T trauma, which my story is not a lot of big T trauma, I feel like I had really, really amazingly healthy present parents. Are they perfect? No. Are there things I needed to work through? Yes. But I would say they both came from pretty big T trauma. You know, addiction, you know, parents with addictions and abuse. And my mom came from war. You know, she was in Japan during World War II at age 5 and lost everything and family members. So we're talking big, big T traumas. And so what's interesting about, we're getting into the weeds on this, but just to drop this in, is epigenetics, which is epi means skin and genetics is pretty obvious. Is a study of both medicine, science, anthropology, and psychology, and sociology that tells us that we, and I'm not saying this the way I probably should, but essentially, we all inherit traumas.
Yes.
From our ancestors.
It gets passed down through your, your bloodline, your genetics.
In your DNA. It's in your DNA. And so there's a lot of great books out there. It Didn't Start With You is one of them. There's a lot of books about on epigenetics that speak to, you know, wow, my mom had so much anxiety over loss of the children and the family members and loved ones. Well, no wonder. She lost her dad and a brother and a sister in the war. So she raised us with a little bit of a helicopter parent, right? And I just wasn't an anxious child. I just didn't have anxiety. I was kind of even coasting through my young adult years and didn't have kids till I was 31 or 30. And all of a sudden I birthed babies. I had twins, were my first. I birthed them and all of a sudden, hello, anxiety, you are now my friend. How did this happen?
The anxiety that hits with kids is like next level.
It's next level, but not everybody's that way. And I would say the reason why I could trace mine back to my mom's epigenetics and my mom's story, because even though I didn't lose any family members, she did. And so even though I still to this day have not lost my children and pray that I never will, but like, I still have this like deep in me moments of anxiety and thoughts and feelings and visceral, like physiological feelings about my children's well-being. And
so do you like go back and rewire yourself or like, what do you do?
You have to do the work to, first of all, awareness comes first. You have to be aware of the fact that it is true. I had to admit, yeah, I find myself anxious. Like literally the butterflies in my stomach that go all the way up into my chest that makes my chest tight and makes me sweat and makes my heart race. Like that's a real physiological response, right? And so I feel that when all of a sudden I thought my child was okay and now they're not or whatever. I just, it's like immediate. And so first I had to admit that I have it, that I'm, you know, even though I'm a therapist, I'm, you know, have issues that I will continuously work on. First awareness and admission, and then really just tracing it back and seeing the why, you know, why, where did this come from?
Yes. Is that kind of the big deal with therapy, is actually just turning over the rocks and getting, looking underneath them. And then instead of just like trying to keep building upon them, step on them and ignore that they're there, you actually take the time to lift them up, look underneath them, examine them, understand it. And then it like has room to be in the sunlight and heal. Is that kind of it? Cause it's not like it's a magic potion where you go to therapy and like you wave this wand. It's like, you kind of just like trace all of your issues back, look at them, really dive into them with you. You have so many awesome tools that you can, that you use as well. And then these issues now have breathing room and they're not this deep secret anymore that you're just like carrying around with you.
100%. No, you're exactly right. It, a lot of it is helping people go, hey, why don't you turn that rock over?
And people are like, no, not that one. Not that one. We can't even talk about that one. And you're like, no, that one, that's the one.
Exactly.
But you're
exactly.
Like, I'll die if I turn that rock over. You're like, okay, we're going to turn it over. And then you turn it over and you're like, okay, I'm not dead. It wasn't as bad as I thought.
Right.
I mean, it was bad, but it wasn't, I'm living through it.
Right.
And the relief that comes after you air out all that, that darkness that you carry with you.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's just life-giving.
Right. You're spot on. I mean, 100% that it is literally, it sets us free when we can speak the truth and we can tell it to ourselves and also tell it to others, which is why a group scenario or even one-on-one therapy, both of those are avenues to basically learning your story and telling your story.
Learning your story. That's another key thing, mm-hmm. because learning your story means accepting and embracing even the parts that you feel super ashamed about, that are ugly, that you want to hide, that were in your childhood trauma, in your childhood abuse, that you were like a victim to, you really had no control over. But like getting control over that, getting power over that story, going back and reworking from your childhood point of view and like understanding, maybe like from your parents' perspective, where they were unhealthy, how this happened, like putting it all together. So it, like you said, you understand the why, and then you don't carry around the shame that you are a tarnished, unlovable, awful person. Because a lot of times people, like that presents itself in anger, and people get angry and people are, you know, defensive because you don't want to deal with all the stuff that happened to you because it's not fair, it's not right, and it's traumatic. But once you can actually talk about it, and like you said, and then you can get in a group or with a therapist, but like talk about it with others who relate, and you realize I'm not like this like scarlet letter person. I'm not this like person who's an outcast. Like I'm just a person who has a past like everyone else. And it's not as like shameful as I thought it had to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And there is something about confession.
Yes.
It's kind of like, that's what it is. It's like you're confessing it and it's again, contagious. Somebody goes, oh, me too. Like this actually just happened in a session. It was so great. It was just yesterday. Somebody was like, she goes, I'm just thinking for the first time that, I probably am loving how much security and value and worth money has given me. She's like, I've never said this out loud. I've never admitted it. But I just feel like I'm scared to let this specific job go because I'm afraid it's going to hurt my worth. I realize I don't like that. I'm doing that. And as she was saying it, I go, huh. And I just, like, I was even stepped into another awareness and confession. And again, in a session, the counselor is not supposed to make it about them ever. But there is a level of empathy that you can also confess as well that makes that person go, oh, okay, I think you're a great person and you have the same thing. Okay, I can, you know, I can admit this or I can accept that, you know, I feel this way. And so there's something about confession that is contagious. And it's like an invitation. It sets both people free.
You get why the Catholic Church does confession. It makes so much sense. And obviously, like, everything can have good and bad side effects. But, like, the intent of confessions of the church seems to be great. Every week, You go and you tell your deepest, darkest sins, and then you get to release them. You've told them, you get to release them. You hopefully you like make amends in your heart and like, or who you need to out there in the world. And then you know that you are not gonna, you're gonna work on being a better person. Like done correctly, it feels like it makes a lot of sense. Cause then you're just like cleansing yourself. You're just every week, you know? And that's what therapy is.
Exactly. And I would say too, what's even more deep and beautiful and lasting is when you get to not only do that in a therapeutic setting, but also do it alongside your peers. Mm-hmm. Cause then they're like, oh dang, they know that. And they just hug me and they love me and they want to be with me. Like to feel like you share these places about your story that you have for like, have so much shame and it's in the dark and you bring it to the light. And not only is it seen, but it's embraced and you're embraced is that's that unconditional kind of connection and friendship is so healing.
And I love that when we're in these big groups and like it's the ball starts rolling and like a topic gets going and it just ping pongs from one woman to the next and everyone's crying and we're telling our deepest, darkest emotions. And it's just like, it's so freeing because these are all women that you respect and like admire that are like contributing women to society. And like, you know, their husbands are all artists. And it's just like to hear everyone going through this, like you said, it is so healing. What are some of, over your course of doing the supporters calls, what are some of like the big revelations that you have seen come from people who have committed to this journey?
Gosh, I feel like it's really hard to pin one or two or three or any of, because it feels like almost every week I get the front row seat and I can't take any credit. It is whoever is showing up that wants to do the work, is basically teaching me. Like, I believe that as I meet with this young 19-year-old, and I see how brave she is and I see her, seeking to stay true to herself and all these different things. And, or she tells some of her story that's really broken and how her parents maybe have dominated and taken her voice and controlled and all that is, it makes me go be a better mom. Like, so I'm going, I have two 19-year-olds and I have a 14-year-old. So dang it. I don't want them to be sitting there saying this very thing. They're going to say other things that I'm not aware of. And I get it. But if I become aware of it, I want to be a better mom. I want to be a better friend, a better wife, you know? And so, so I feel like I'm learning so much from the people that are coming in here, but honestly, it's almost too many to count. It could be marriages that you think are in stage four cancer death, as far as, you know, infidelity and lying and betrayal and just hard-heartedness and hate and contempt. And then they're in
and
a
probably
room
throw and some substance abuse in on top of it all.
100%, lots of things. And so, because like you said earlier, we all medicate and cope somehow. And most likely our ways of coping and medicating are not healthy. They just add to the issue. So you take that and I just see, and to see them, see their marriages restored. And I see that a lot.
And that's
why when
Michael and I went to couples therapy for the first time, not because we have some like traumatic marriage issue. We just have a lot of issues in life that need to be dealt with. And I don't have the tools, the professional tools to do it. And neither does Michael. And I feel like that was like really a breakthrough for us just to be able to talk it out with you, you know, instead of just like me trying to give an answer or Michael trying to give an answer. It's like, here's you who has actual resources and like great advice and tools for us to lean on. It's just so nice to not feel like you have to just figure it out only with your spouse, because sometimes you don't have the answer.
Right. Well, this is the way I see it. I kind of, as an analogy, I offer kind of two different analogies or metaphors. One is I feel like I'm a therapeutic midwife. And so I get to coach you through the process of birthing something. So you could be birthing healing from your childhood. You could be birthing fears over motherhood. You could be birthing just a restoration of this next level of your marriage that you never knew possible. Like, I get to just coach you and go, Caroline, you got this, girl. You got it. You got what it takes. You're so close. Just keep going. And so I get to, but I'm not birthing the baby. I'm not raising the baby, and I'm not going through the physical pains. That's why we need someone on the outside that is actually coaching us, that can give, they have the energy to do it, because they're not going to be the one raising that baby long term. They're not the one in that marriage long term. So that's one metaphor for some people that are like, the midwife thing is a little weird. If I'm a guy, I don't get it. Another thing I usually would say is, I'm kind of like your adventure guide, and I have the compass and I know how to read the compass, but it's actually, I'm going to take you so far in your journey, and I'm going to give you the tools, and along the way, I'm going to show you how to read this compass. And then as we journey together for a season, I'm going to hand the compass to you, and you guys have what it takes to continue on this journey. That's and amazing. So those are the two metaphors that I feel like really help to identify what I get to do, you know, in counseling as a porter. And so, but you're the one that's training for that mountain climb. You're the one that has to summit that with your spouse.
So
you're the one
commitment.
Birthing that baby.
You're committed because you're obviously committed. This is your job and your calling, but it takes true commitment on the other end too.
100%.
I mean, it's a long hike. This is like a year long journey at least.
That's so, right. That's right.
I mean, it's not a fast walk here.
It's not a sprint.
No.
It's more, way more of a huge climb. And so I think what's beautiful about it is that, you know, if people are showing up for therapy or going to groups or making those kind of commitments of time and money, then they're in it. They're mm-hmm. ready to do the work. And so when you ask that question, what's the work? It's all those things. It's showing up. It's committing to the therapeutic process. It's putting the efforts in, listening to podcasts, listening to, you know, reading books that are helpful. It's engaging in community and investing and also receiving in a healthy environment to get these tools and practice them. So that's what the work is.
How do you manage all of this information that is in your head? Like, you know, so much, and like, you know, so much trauma and pain, and like, how do you cope with all of that?
I mean, it's because I'm not, even though I see hundreds of people, you know, we're not like a traditional therapeutic office where a clinician will have 20 clients that are active, and when one rolls off, they add another one in. So for us, it's hundreds in any given period of time. And so, and the reason is I'm not raising 300 babies. I'm not taking 300 hikes with this couple. Like, we really are in the trenches for a season, and then it starts to kind of graduate into, again, this is where porters are different than therapists. And, my role at Porter's Call is a little different, it turns into friendship. And so, so there's a lot of people that I was in the trenches with, and there was major crisis or major trauma, and in the trenches with them for a season. And then it just kind of gets to a place where it's like, they're on a journey, and they're really, their head's way above the waters. They're not drowning.
Is that so fulfilling for you when you see that?
Is that
like, is that it for you? Is that like what fulfilled you to see that?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I've never been in a job this long. I'm like a 3 to 5 year, I'm bored, time to move on. I need to be more challenged, you know, and this is one of those where it's like, I just told Al, who's our founder, I was like, this is the last job I want to have. Like,
well,
I can't
see that because you're always getting new scenarios, new types of situations, like stuff that's just like so out of this world. I'm sure that it's never a stagnant.
Right. Exactly. It's a very dynamic scenario where you can't get bored because like you said, every person is different. Every hour is different. But I think what sustains me and actually causes me to thrive is when I see growth, when I see people putting in the time and the effort. Like I said, the person I saw yesterday, she, you know, went through really hard stuff with her husband. And now on the other side, we're not that far out of this major crisis, and we didn't talk about it at all. We talked about her just wanting to be a better mom and a friend and deal with money better. I'm like, this is so fun. Like, I get
this
to
is
learn.
Where we are now.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just, it's so much fun to be spending time with resilient people that are courageous and brave and working hard and growing. And I learn from them. And then I get to see them domino effect to others. Everybody that comes here finds out from somebody else that's been here.
It's so cool. So my podcast that is this week right now, her name is Scout Sobel, and she is an entrepreneur. She runs a big podcast network where she like gets women on podcasts, and she's awesome. She suffered from bipolar disorder since she was 14, and it plagued her life. And like, she was clinically diagnosed with all sorts of stuff, like told she'd never amount to anything, all sorts of things. Anyway, she found entrepreneurship and therapy and started doing all this work, and she got to the other side of her bipolar disorder. She figured out through being an entrepreneur and like chasing passions and dreams and like staying focused on her particular passion and all this. Like, great story. Everyone should check her out. She just wrote a book, The Emotional Entrepreneur. But we talked about this, and it relates to this. What if she hadn't done the work to get to the other side of her bipolar disorder? What if when she was 14 and had her first episode, she would have thrown in the towel and been like, I'm not going to be able to handle this. I'm not going to be able to get through this. I can't amount to anything. This is controlling my life. What if instead of going on that journey and going through the work and doing all the mental therapy and everything she did, what she would have missed out in this thriving life that she has? And I've interviewed tons of people who've gotten to the other side. You every day see people getting to the other side. And that's my wish for everyone in listening, but really in the world, is that like you can get to the other side of your pain because you have to go through it. And once you get to the other side, the life that you can live is so incredible, but you will never get to experience it if you don't do that work and walk through the burning flames. And it sucks to go through it. And like, I know why people don't want to do it. Like, I get it completely. But I just have seen so many people, including myself. I'm like you, I didn't have tons of trauma myself, but like I can see, I totally understand like the family lineage trauma. That makes a lot of sense. But like my life, my parents were great. I had, you know, minimal issues growing up. I had a lot of my own personal issues because I'm an insane person. But if you don't go through it to get to the other side, you miss it. Like, you miss this glorious life that's waiting for you that you still have to work hard for, but it's just so different.
That's so good. I would say exactly what you said. There's so many nuggets. I just feel like you just need to constantly be talking and doing podcasts forever and ever and amen. Because you have such a great way of communicating things and bringing it all together. But there's so much of what you said. I was like, oh yes. But one of the things is like when you're talking about going through it, a metaphor I use a lot is we can choose to go through the fire and know that there's going to be a lot of heat and a lot of pressure. But if you think about it, like diamonds are refined and beautified through pressure and time and heat. And so that refining is so important to push through, even though it's painful, because otherwise, if you go around it, you're going to die of smoke inhalation. I mean, essentially that metaphor translates to, like you said, if this young woman if she just kind of gave up and didn't have the tools, she would feel crippled for the rest of her life in so many ways.
And now she's gone on to create amazing stuff from her soul.
Exactly.
Making her feel alive and it's healthy. And that's just one example. Right. But you miss it.
So true. Yeah. You miss it. And we don't ever arrive, right? But when you say get to the other side, you're exactly right. There's this sense of like, getting to a place where you can actually lift your head up, you know, you're not on the ground, you can actually see, you can start thriving. And it doesn't mean it's perfect. It's like if you hit a wall in a marathon, you may physically fall down, but you're going to get up and keep running again. And so there's going to be setbacks, but just the freedom and the peace that comes with it and the joy of being able to like get on that other side. But it's never going to be perfect. But I always say our pain is our superpower.
I love that.
Right? Our pain is our superpower. So she went through pain. You know, if you go through a fire, you're going through pain. But that is your superpower. If you've had suffering, it is that suffering whether it's self-inflicted suffering, like something you did that you're really ashamed of, that is a moral failure, that suffering, or if it's something that's been done to you, that suffering, you know, people that have been abuse victims are the biggest advocators and the biggest activists and advocates for the hurting.
Yes.
And the reason why is they know what it's been like to be helpless and powerless and abused and a victim. And so they are going to advocate for them. And so, you know, someone that is a child of an alcoholic parent that was abusive, they have the potential to do one of two things: follow in their footsteps or be an advocate for a healthy parenting and healthy coping. So
I love that.
It's really empowering to go, oh, this isn't shaping me in a negative way. It could give me power.
And also, I think too, the thing that I love so much about therapy, one-on-one, couples therapy, and group therapy, is just removing the shame from these things that we carry. Like, we all carry so much shame, and we all feel like we're the only one who has it, but we're not. And it's just so important to find a safe place to talk about it and to understand it, like you said. I think that is so crucial. And sometimes people feel overwhelmed, like they'll never be able to get through it, but you can. And you're really just adding such a blessing to your life by letting yourself really become who you came here to be. And you're gonna just like clean out some layers.
Love that. I could not have said it better myself. It's amazing.
Okay. Well, I could talk to you forever. I always want to be in your presence. Like, literally, so does everyone who's around you. Everyone's like, Beth, this is the best. Beth is the best. Like, you are the greatest. Like, the greatest. I always wrap up with leave your light. And basically, it's just an open-ended question. What do you want people to know?
About me or in general?
About you and in general.
Okay. I want people to know that I am far from perfect. I am far from having all the answers, but I will show up. And that's what I would say is just, if you can just show up with your full authentic self, you don't have to be pieced together in this perfect little, you know, picture, but just show up in all of your brokenness and beauty. And that's that. We're not intended to be perfect. We're intended to be broken and beautiful.
I love that, Beth. I love that. Thank you for everything you do. Thank you for changing the world with offering your services and your heart to so many people. Where can people find out about Porter's Call, just to check it out? Even if you're not an artist, like, where can they go to donate, to check it out, to maybe, if you are an artist or an artist's wife, to get a session? Where can people check it out?
Yeah, it's literally just go on the website, porterscall.com. So just P-O-R-T-E-R-S, no apostrophe, C-A-L-L.com. And we have a little bit of a social media presence, but mostly we are online. You can find a way to contact our office manager to get an appointment. There's a place to donate. If you really believe in helping artists and their families be healthy and continue to make good music, then we always appreciate donations. As a nonprofit, it's tax deductible. So that's what keeps our doors open for the past 20 years. And we hope we'll always be present, because we see people more than Nashville. We see a lot of people in LA and New York through Zoom and phone calls. So, and Atlanta and Texas and, you know, all the places. So if you believe in really supporting mental health, we always appreciate that. If you qualify at Porter's Call, we'd love to see you. So please check us out.
Beth, you are amazing. I'm so thankful to have you in my life. Thank you so much for joining me.
Me too. Absolutely. Love you, Caroline.
Okay. Love you too. Bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.